Jess Adkins is Professor of Chemistry at Caltech, and yes, you heard right. What the ocean and glaciers do in the Southern Hemisphere down here affects what happens in the sea up there in Greenland and North America. And Andrew Thompson, Jess's colleague, has found out how it works. Where do you go in the Southern Ocean?
Most of my work has been around the Antarctic Peninsula. We've worked in the Weddell Sea, which is to the eastern side of the peninsula, and we have some work coming up in the Bellingshausen Sea, which is actually located along the western side of the peninsula.
And you're looking down deep. Do you actually go deep?
Well, not personally, but we have instruments that allow us to go down deep. We've been using a type of ocean robotics known as gliders that allow us to actually measure the temperature and salinity properties below the surface.
And they sink down and stay there how long?
They actually dive continuously, so they will sink down to about 1,000 meters, but then they come straight back up, and it takes them a couple hours to do that, and they will continue sampling up and down for 3, 4, 5 months at a time.
You must have a vast amount of information then.
Well, that's one of the nice things is these persistent measurements have really allowed us to look at how the currents in the circulation are changing with time, and the availability to have more data has allowed us to really understand more about the circulation.
And when you go down deep, is it very lumpy down there with the equivalent of mountain ranges and such like?
Yeah, that's right. We look a lot at what happens at what we call the continental shelf break, so where you transition between a shallow and pretty flat shelf and then go off the continental slope, which is very, very steep. We've actually had our gliders bump into those lumpy bits from time to time. So yeah, we know quite a bit about what bathymetry looks like.
And they're steering these great bodies of water, because if you look at the map, there's a huge amount of ocean down there, almost compared, say, to the Northern Hemisphere where there's less.
That's right. 2 years ago in 2016, we were out in a region called Drake Passage, which is between the Antarctic Peninsula and South America, and we were actually able to move the gliders all the way across the passage and back during our deployment at that time.
How far is that?
Oh, it's probably about 600 to 700 kilometers.
That is vast, isn't it? And how much do they steer the water overall across the entire Southern Hemisphere?
That's right. The current that we've been spending a lot of time looking at is what's known as the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, and this is the very strong current that goes all the way around Antarctica. This circulation is incredibly strong, circulation or velocities of a meter per second at the surface, and this is the current that it really allows different properties to move from, say, the Atlantic Basin into the Indian and the Pacific, and so these currents that we're looking at are incredibly important for moving different properties around the ocean.
Right up to the north.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, that's one of the questions we're trying to answer. What we've been looking at is how heat gets towards the coast of Antarctica and may be responsible for melting the underside of ice shelves. And the somewhat remarkable thing is that this heat actually originated from the North Atlantic and actually sank in regions in the Arctic Ocean.
Right up from the North Atlantic heat, well, further north than here.
Yeah, so all the way up off the coast of Greenland sometimes is where this water sinks. You know, it's still relatively cold, but it has enough heat in it to actually melt the underside of the ice shelves. And tracking the pathways for where that heat originated, where it's actually coming out of the ocean or touching the bottom of these ice shelves are what we're trying to understand.
So the entire movement is making the globe gradually warmer overall.
Yeah, that's right. So we have large networks of autonomous floats that we can use to look at globally average temperatures, and they are increasing globally. But what we see is that the pathways by which that heat moves around can lead to certain regions that are warmer, others that are colder, and trying to interpret those patterns has a lot to tell us about how the ocean will change in a different climate.
Have you noticed changes while you've been watching, while you've been doing the studies over the years?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think I have. I mean, one of the things that's always been a little bit surprising has been that while we've seen, for instance, sea ice retreating in the Arctic, it's been relatively stable around Antarctica for the last 20 years or so, up until about 2 years ago, in which we've seen really rapid changes, especially in this region, the Bellingshausen Sea.
Yeah, people forget the fact that the ice sheet in the Antarctic can be about 2 kilometers thick. In other words, you've got a hell of a lot of ice to get through. But, you know, in the west and various places where that gigantic famous crack was that we saw in the middle of last year, you've got melting going there and also underneath. So you're saying it's accelerating now, is it?
Well, that's what we're trying to work on. I mean, it's certainly, as you look around West Antarctica, there's evidence that the thickness of these floating ice shelves, their thinning has accelerated. And as you mentioned, the interesting thing here is that melting is not happening from above, say, due to a warming atmosphere, but it's really happening from below, which really points the finger at the ocean.
Incredible, isn't it? And when you go there, a personal question. Are you there marooned on a great big ship going up and down, requiring a strong stomach and such like?
Absolutely. Drake Passage can be one of the worst places to actually try and navigate. You have those occasional crossings. They actually refer to it as the Drake Lake when it's flat, but those are few and far between. I've been up on the bridge, which could be about 4 stories above the sea surface, and watching waves actually crash onto the window of the bridge. And it's pretty rough in those times.
So how do you cope?
I don't always cope terribly well. It's usually a waiting game. Those first few days are usually kind of tough to get through, and then it seems to go away. But the opportunity to kind of be out at sea, and especially when you're really close to the coast and you're just seeing the icebergs, the sea ice, it's a special place to be, and so it makes that worthwhile.
Did you go on land at all?
We've been fortunate. My group spent quite a bit of time at Palmer Station, which is a U.S. base on the western side of the peninsula. It's quite small. Actually, through the winter, I think they have a staff of about a dozen people that they're over winter. And even in the summer, it's no more than about 80 people. And it's a wonderful place to be.
And do you work at all with other countries, Australians, who are just around the corner in Tasmania?
We've actually started collaborating quite closely with a group in Australia. I'd say in general, oceanography is a wonderful science because you really have to collaborate internationally to get work done. And we've been working with a group at CSIRO to actually deploy some autonomous floats into the Ross Gyre and try to understand the dynamics of that circulation feature better.
And where's the next expedition south?
So our next expedition coming up that we're quite excited about is in a region known as the Bellingshausen Sea. And as we mentioned, the western side of the Antarctic continent is really unique in that these are places where the ice shelves are thinning rapidly. A lot of attention has been paid to a region known as the Amundsen Sea and Pine Island Glacier. Bellingshausen is just next door, and its ice shelves are somewhat smaller but thinning as rapidly. But there's very few measurements there, and we're hoping to improve that.
Andrew Thompson is Professor of Environmental Science and Engineering at Caltech.